Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 38. Today, we are going to be talking about EmberConf because we're late to the party, and all the EmberConf wrap-ups that you already have heard happened last week, but ours is happening this week, which makes it a very this week EmberConf wrap-up. My name is Charles. I'm a developer here at the Frontside, and this was my third EmberConf. Hard to believe. It was my first EmberConf where I actually got to speak. With me here, we've got three other people from the Frontside. We've got Stephanie and Robert and Lydia. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves, starting with you, Stephanie.
Hello. My name is Stephanie. I am a front-end developer here at the Frontside, and this was my first EmberConf. It was awesome.
All right.
Hello, everybody. My name's Robert. I'm also a developer here at the Frontside, and this was my second EmberConf, but first I didn't find a new job.
I forgot about that. And I'm Lydia Guarino, and I am also a front-end developer here at the Frontside. And this was my second EmberConf, and I also had the honor of participating in the Women Helping Women program this year. So I got to do some cool stuff on Monday before the event as well.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Well, it wasn't just the Monday, right? You said it was the whole, like, an entire year.
Right.
Leading up to that.
Yeah, so it's a program that Leia put together following EmberConf last year with the goal of trying to recruit more female speakers and get more awesome female Ember developers involved in the community. So over the past year, there's been forums and some hangouts and some other in-person events that were all geared towards helping women develop public speaking skills, reviewing content, submitting talk proposals. And I think anybody that attended the conference this year probably saw the outcome of that, which was there were 12 amazing female speakers.
Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, it'll be great when it's 50-50 or, I don't know, more women than male speakers, but that's still the best distribution I've ever seen. And they were incredibly high quality talks.
The caliber of speaker was really just off the charts.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Honestly, I was pleasantly surprised. I really, really liked that.
All right, so where should we start off?
Just go down the list. Day one. Let's go with day zero, actually. Monday had some stuff, right?
Yeah. So actually, would it be possible for us to kind of like give a high-level overview of what some of the themes were? Because I think like the talks this year kind of fell into some general categories of things that you know, the community has all kind of gathered behind and are interested in knowing more about. Mm-hmm. So what were some of the themes that you guys saw?
Well, so, I mean, we can start with, you know, the themes that were kind of laid out in the opening keynote. I know that one of the big themes, that there was a lot of different takeaways there, and I think a lot of people kind of took the message in a bunch of different ways. One of the things that came through to me was the kind of the advocacy of Ember towards really pushing the web forward as the answer for mobile. So they came out in a very, very strong stance saying, you know, there will not be an Ember native. What we're going to do is we want to push mobile tools forward. And here are the areas that need to move. And kind of it was served as kind of a call to people to jump in on, you know, the local storage side and
app
and,
cache,
and, you know, the offline story to make that a better experience. I know for me personally, I kind of the bit that it flipped in my head was I kind of came into that talk, well, not really having many thoughts, but coming out of it and kind of the thing that's been brewing in my head for the 2 weeks that have been 2 weeks since is that the revolution that happened on the desktop side, where essentially web applications have eaten native desktop applications. I mean, there are still a few notable exceptions, but if someone came to us and said, I want to develop a desktop application, and what should we use to do it? I would definitely tell them web technology. I think that, and most people, 99% of the case, they would say that. And it kind of walked out of that talk with the realization that, oh, that moment will happen for mobile eventually. I don't know where it is. I don't know if it's 5 years down the road. I don't know if it's 2 years down the road. Who knows? It might even be sooner. But there will be a tipping point. There will be some maxima at which point going mobile web is going to be the right answer. And that I definitely walked away with that kind of clarity. But then, of course, the question of when is that? When are we gonna jump into that? So that's kind of the question that has now been brewing in my mind. I think that were there really any other talks kind of addressing the mobile web? I think there were a couple, weren't there?
Well, there was a Cordova talk, and then mm-hmm. also kind of a related how to build desktop apps. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, to me, it felt like what they were trying to say in the keynote was, you know, a lot of the other frameworks are kind of trying to support both branches right now, both mm-hmm. mobile and or both native and web, and they're kind of saying we're going all in on web. And
right.
we just want to like put the effort and the kind of the manpower of the community behind improving the experience for web so that it's kind of there are not as many observable differences between the two. And you can kind of harmoniously continue to develop web applications with the intent of them being used on mobile devices.
Yeah. And I think that's the good long term bet.
Yeah, they throw around the word web SDK. They kind of really want to focus behind Ember being like your SDK to develop really great web apps for both desktop mm-hmm. and mobile.
That's right. We have to forget. We have to not forget the buzzwords.
Let's get that hype engine going.
Right, right.
So the next theme that I kind of took away from a lot of the talks was new and innovative ways to improve designer developer collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I thought was really excellent because we work in a front end framework. We work with designers all the time. And it's, you know, a constant refinement process to figure out how to be the most productive when you're passing a product back and forth between a designer and a development
right.
team. And it seems like a lot of people have kind of stumbled upon this similar useful strategy of a living style guide
mm-hmm.
Where you have, you know, all of your components and all of your kind of widget pieces and aesthetic pieces all in an isolated setting where you can, you know, test different iterations really quickly that aren't as tangled up in the rest of your application code, and being able to use that as a conversation tool to get more feedback faster instead of having, you know, pixel perfect comps passed to you.
Yeah.
Instead, it's this like more iterative process.
Yeah. Chris, who gave the one of the first talks, and it was in day one, Chris Lepresto, he works at Yap. He said that they were able to get feedback on design and components day one before they even had API set up or anything like that. They were able to start iterating upon the designs and perfecting those things because in like the comps, it just lives there as a static thing. Whenever you make it a component that lives and it interacts and you do things with it, like sometimes that static comp kind of starts to degrade a little bit and mm-hmm. The part that I thought was really awesome was the fact that you start pairing with designers, which is something that I've always like kind of subconsciously thought I wanted to do, right? Like whenever a designer told me something was wrong, I'd be like, okay, well, can you sit with me and like kind of show me like what you want to do? So like pairing with a designer on a component to make the design and interaction perfect sounds like heaven, honestly, because that like that can sharpen my skills. I can understand their goal. It like tightens the feedback loop. I think it's just like great all around, and I think it will create much better UX out of it and UI.
Yeah, I think that's actually being challenged by good design is, I mean, kind of one of the things that, you know, we're all about. And it seems like a great shame that we go to these developer conferences and the design community isn't always very well represented, when really like these are the two communities, especially when it comes to front end and it comes to UI, these are the two communities that have the most to learn from each other and have the most to gain
yep.
from each other. I have to say, it's like, it's kind of like a little bit of a pipe dream of mine. I want us to put on a conference where we bring like half UX people and half like front end developers, just to kind of talk to each other and, you know, present the modern techniques and just encourage that ferment. And it's good to see, it was good to see that as kind of like a little mini track, a mini theme going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I have friends that are designers and they've always kind of mentioned they feel like sometimes they're left out of developer meetings that they think that they should be a part of. And like there's this divide between developers and designers, or like they might not be able to understand something. And I think you're actually going to have a better product if you work together and as a cohesive mm-hmm. unit, because you're both working towards the same end goal of a great product.
Yeah, I think those barriers are entirely artificial. And I hope that at some point there's some watershed moment where we get to like smash them down. I mean, there's always a little bit of, there are some problems, right? I think the design cycle a lot of times can be very small, whereas like the development cycle can be very mm-hmm. large. So the design iterations are the design of a project might be on the order of weeks, whereas the implementation of that might be on the order of months. And so it can be difficult to kind of keep those, the design and the development, rotating in harmonious ways. But I mean, you know, the alternative is to have, you know, a discord between the two.
So the cool part about that is, you know, how you link those two circles, even though one might be larger in diameter. You do the live style guide,
mm-hmm.
and you
right
exactly that.
Like,
yeah, that's
the clutch, right? Right, yeah. Robert.
Yeah,
to use the gearhead analogy.
Yeah. All right. Now we're talking about cars. This podcast is now about cars. Sorry, everybody. You thought this was EmberConf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, at my last company, we built a living style guide, mm-hmm. and from a developer velocity perspective, it was so handy mm-hmm. because you had the example code, you had like the actual interactive element that you could play with, and you could see all of its different states, so you knew like that, you know, error states or loading states, things like that. You could see them and be able to like test them without having to like recreate the precise
right.
Like application state to make that happen. And it just made it so much easier, particularly for like onboarding new people, to see that all of these elements already existed. There was kind of a catalog for you to choose from. And you could save a lot of cycles trying to reinvent the wheel on something that's already been implemented somewhere else in the code, and be able to like actually interact with examples.
Yeah. Like kind of like having it in a little snow globe that you can just pick up off the shelf. I think and what's awesome about that, and what I'm kind of excited too, is like, so you had it at at your previous employer. We've actually had one of our clients has a living style guide. All of those were one-off solutions. I think it would be just fantastic if there were some way that we could just get this for free, or with very low cost with an add-on or something.
Good news.
So this became kind of the standard practice, is just something that is done in Ember projects.
Yeah. Well, so that was actually a component of Chris's talk, mm-hmm. Which was that they actually open sourced the Yap, like the style guide that they built out. And then it even included, my favorite part was that they included a component that helps build the snippets.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually display the code itself right next to the demo example,
mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, one of our clients also has something robust built out like that, where you can actually like get in there and directly on the same page make edits to the mm-hmm. code and see how it impacts the behavior of the component. So for side by side pairing on that with a designer, it's like the perfect little isolated microcosm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for everybody following along at home, this add-on is called Ember Freestyle. And it looks like, so when he released it, it was a very much a work in progress. And it still kind of is, it looks like. But there's been a lot of work been getting done on this since the announcement, which is really cool.
Ah, I guess other people are just as excited as we are.
So much
yeah,
win.
And also, like, I was just thinking about this, like, a nice added side effect of seeing all your components and all of their states. you can clearly see if a component is doing way too much or not.
Like, how do you mean?
So if you have a component that, you know, you've refactored and you're like, oh, wait, the main responsibility of this component is now no longer this. It now has a job responsibility of this, this, and this. And it's like, okay, maybe we can break this down. Maybe this component has gotten a little too complex.
Right.
You can kind of see, like, at different macro and micro levels of your components. And I think that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there was a little bit of a third theme that is a little bit more nebulous than those two. But there were a lot of talks that were more about people in the community that are sort of pushing the boundaries of what Ember might look like in, you know, the next couple of years. So, like, Charles, I feel like your talk on immutability sort of falls a little bit into this category. I think Matthew Beal's talk maybe falls a little bit into this category. And I don't know if that was intentional or that's just, like, you know, people are excited about the things that they're experimenting with. But it was really interesting to see, you know, how many different people are sort of pulling the intentions of Ember in a couple of different directions. And I want to see, like, what happens next year as a result of that.
Yeah, I am very, very curious as to how that plays out. Obviously, I have feels on this. I mean, I would like to see, you know, from my perspective, I'd like to see some of the things that I talked about get enshrined in kind of the Ember way, the way things that are done. But I was deliberately conservative in kind of what I advocated. I really wanted to keep it at a high level as to the idea of immutability inside of a UI. I watched Matthew's talk. That a lot of it, I have to say, even for me, was pretty, like, inscrutable. Like, he's obviously very, very deep into some very, very, like, heavy stuff. You know, the meat of it was talking about how we might be able to share Ember components along with Angular components, along with Polymer components, all inside of the same application, which I think, you know, that's definitely a little bit face melty, right? It's the idea that, 'cause right now we've got this great ecosystem of Ember add-ons. Now imagine that you could just reach out beyond the Ember community and just, you know, riffle through what's out there in the Angular community and say, oh, yeah, I love that interaction. I want that in my application, and just be able to drop it in as an inline HTML element, and kind of, you know, showing some of the promise of that and also kind of the hills that are left to climb. But, you know, he also had some working code there, you know, kind of demonstrating using these different components, which was really cool. Like, I felt like I was getting, like, a little bit of a 5-year window into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but he does have a RFC out right now called Element Modifiers,
mm-hmm.
which looks very similar to what his conference talk is about. So if you guys want to give that a good old read, it's over on the RFC. We'll put that in the show notes too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely the most forward-looking one that I saw.
So did you guys get a chance to do any of the activities on Monday? Any of the walking tours or the trainings or anything like that?
I didn't get to do any trainings, but I was a mentor.
And I was a mentee.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I think – so you didn't actually, like, submit – I was a mentor as well, and you didn't actually, like, submit where you worked when you filled out the application. And I think they probably went off of, like, city and similar interests. So Stephanie and I at our, like, 8-person company got paired up as a mentor-mentee combination. So I think we kind of cheated the system a little bit. But we still got to go to the evening event on Monday night, which was an excellent mixer where they kind of did, like, mentor-mentee speed dating.
Mm-hmm.
So they set us all up around different tables, which is what they did last year, too, right? You were a mentee last year, Rob?
Yeah. Funny story, actually. I missed my connecting flight, so I didn't actually get to go to the meeting last year.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I got to sit in LAX, which is great. I met some interesting people.
Did you get to at least hack on some Ember code while you were in your layover?
I went and talked to Alex Manchir and didn't do much else. I was actually looking for power. the entire time.
Aww.
But yeah, I think bring it back to the mentor meeting or mentor-mentee meeting. I think all the value was in the speed dating there. I got to meet a bunch of people. It was really cool. I definitely think it hit its goal in acclimating people that were like first-time conference goers or first-time Ember community people to people that were already experienced in the community. And like you walked in the first day on Tuesday of the conference knowing people.
So,
which was awesome.
Yeah. So what was the structure of that like? As someone who's never actually attended an event like that, what did that look like?
So they had a bit of a mixer game. So when you first walked in, they had collected some like fun facts about everybody, and they made a little bit of a bingo game. And so you had to actually walk around the room meeting a whole bunch of people. I think it felt like there were maybe 60 people there.
Yeah.
I would estimate. Mm-hmm. So probably 30-ish mentees, 30-ish mentors. Mm-hmm. And all of the fun facts were weird enough that you actually wanted to find out, who had walked across half the U.S. or something like that. There were several like really interesting ones. That was Jade Applegate, by the way.
That was who?
That was Jade, who was one of the speakers.
Oh, really? Has walked across half of the U.S.?
Yeah.
Wow,
or something
that
like
sounds
that,
exhausting.
Right?
Yeah, that was definitely her. I asked her if she had like a Forrest Gump moment. She said yes.
But she just kept on walking?
Yeah.
Kept on running.
All power to her.
Yeah. Past the cherry tree, past the mailbox.
Yeah. They did kind of like an unstructured mixer at the beginning where you kind of walked around and like tried to fill out this bingo game, which thankfully everyone was totally game to play along with. It's no fun when, people are like, oh, I'm too cool for school and, I don't want to participate in that. Everybody seemed game for this. And then the second half, they set up tables around the room and the mentors stayed stationary and the mentees rotated around the room. And so you ended up meeting about 15 of either the mentors or the mentees, depending on which role you were in. And you had like a 5-minute conversation with them. And
yep.
That was enough time to get enough details about that person to like bump into them at the conference the next day and feel like you had something in common and something to talk about.
Right.
So yeah, like Rob said, I think that was actually really successful in helping people feel like they weren't showing up to a conference by themselves.
Yeah. I mean, because it really sucks when you like, I've been there in the first day of a conference and you're like, I know absolutely no one here. I have no idea how I can break into these people's circles because people are already going to have their friends and everything. Just getting in and knowing people is probably 70% of the battle of anybody's anxiety at a conference.
Yeah, definitely. This was my first conference, and I'm still relatively a Ember noob, so it's... it was nice to get to meet a lot of people there. And I always get super excited when I get to meet other women that are into coding and development and making connections with people that live in Boston, New Jersey, LA. Oh, next time I'm there, I'll pay you a visit. It's really nice to have that. But being my first conference, I didn't feel like I had no one to talk to at all. Like the next day after that, I was bumping into people in the hotel, in the rooms, in the hallways. Mm-hmm. Like it was really awesome to be able to do that and have that experience after doing the little mini speed dating.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I bumped into you for the rest of the conference, you had, a little entourage of people. And I didn't know them at all.
So
I think that
person.
Was a success.
Maybe.
Oh, you're such a rock star.
Yeah.
So the other cool thing that I got to do on Monday that was part of the Women Helping Women was a public speaking tutorial, basically, or workshop. And that was amazing because it was like 15 women in a room, none of which, like none of us are comfortable like doing improv exercises.
Oh, you did improv?
Yeah. So it was some like improv exercises where, you're projecting or you're just trying to like break the seal on saying something out loud. and like directionality of how you're speaking and how you hold your arms and things like that, which when you're doing it like pretty close to other humans is pretty hysterical. So mostly we just like, you know, fell apart into laughter frequently. But Bear Douglas led that and she was phenomenal. Like she should just do these little workshops all over the country. I'm sure she does them a lot.
Did you say she speaks something like two-thirds of every day, like two-thirds of every year?
She said she had given like over 100 talks this year or like throughout last year, which is just an obscene number of talks. I don't remember the precise number that she gave, but it was enough that everyone in the room was like, how is that even physically possible?
I gave one and I was like, yep, that's it for the year. Thanks.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like having, I don't know, having your heart like plucked out through your nose or something like that? It just, it's painful.
Yeah.
You're like, so rewarding after 200 times?
Yeah. But the other cool thing that came out of that was there were a lot of people that were in the workshop that were actually giving talks. So several of the women that were giving talks got to test drive some of their content on the room and get feedback in, you know, kind of a less intimidating setting. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that, you know, after seeing the first 2 minutes and kind of the previews of them on Monday and then seeing the actual talks on Tuesday, like there were some major improvements from some people, that, especially from a confidence perspective, mm-hmm. where you could tell they just their stage presence just blossomed after like having this public speaking workshop, which I thought was really cool.
That's awesome. And I do remember you saying like during the conference, like I think it should be opened up to everybody.
I do. Yeah. I think that, you know, I like that they did put in extra effort for recruiting and, you know, like retaining female speakers. Mm-hmm. But I think that anyone would have benefited from being able to take the public speaking workshop. We're a community that likes to share ideas, and that's a component that gets, you know, overlooked frequently. I mean, we run a meetup, and I would love it if all the speakers at the meetup, you know, had the opportunity mm-hmm. to get feedback on public speaking or the presentations that they're giving.
Yeah. There's an equalizing effect there. Cause like, you know, like I know I had access to you all and had to subject you guys to so many like test runs of my talk, but like not everybody has that. Not everybody has that opportunity. And it really does. It makes a huge difference to get to like get that feedback and get the you know, have that platform. And I'd like to see that in, you know, in more conferences just in general, have them working more with speakers, because it really, like, it was very clear that, I mean, the caliber, you know, that program paid off. Those talks were so good.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of your favorite talks from, let's just limit it to day one?
Well, I'm not going to start with me because, like, day one, I watched like the keynote, like the other one, like two talks, and then I like fled back into my hotel room to work on my own.
We'll take that as a valid excuse, Charles.
I cannot be the one.
Your talk turned out
question.
Amazing, so ducking out of some of those talks sounds like it was totally worth it.
So honestly, I went to one talk in day one. I mostly hallway tracked. Because, you know, you make all those internet friends and you're like, oh, now you're all here now. Now I have to talk and see to you all. So I actually, the only one I saw on day one, I think, was, well, I saw the keynote and then I saw the Living Style Guide from Chris. And from there, it was just mostly like, I am going to talk to everybody in person.
Yeah, I definitely liked Brenna's talk. I think that she gave a lot of good feedback, and she did a good job of like not going too over my head. Because a lot of the talks, like since I'm still new to Ember, it goes over my head, which is perfectly fine. I think I should be exposed to things that will be going over my head. But I liked that talk. And then I really liked, I don't know if it was still on the first day, but she was very eloquent. And I kept repeating that throughout the conference. I can't remember.
This is the talk that I know that I'm sad that I missed.
Estelle? The Ember Build one, Estelle?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she was incredibly articulate.
What was it that you said again?
I was saying that I was sitting in the audience being like, man, you just threw a lot of really incredibly technical stuff at me, but it really felt like golden butter just spilled out of your mouth. It was just so smooth. She had clearly rehearsed it so much. And like, I mean, it was just one of the most effortless deliveries that I thought was available at the conference. She just clearly put in a lot of work on that. And it's a relatively complex thing she was explaining.
Yeah,
I don't spend a lot of time inspecting the Ember CLI build, you know? Yeah. And she made it accessible to me. That's something that I can go back and watch that talk and dive in a little deeper.
Yeah, I'm actually, that's the first one that's on my list, because not just from you guys, but almost everybody that I heard of at the conference was just gushing about the presentation and the way that she was able to take this complex subject and make it so effortlessly understandable. That's number one on the fave list.
And Charles, yeah. You said did you go to the Illustrated
I did.
Guide to Ember one?
I did. I really liked that one.
Bridget Warner's talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
No, I really enjoyed really that. Too. It just made me realize how important like good storytelling is in a talk. And mm-hmm. the fact that there was a protagonist, and the fact that there was plot twist, and the fact that there was suspense, and the fact that there was denouement, like it held my attention the entire time. And it was at the same time the slides were so beautifully illustrated. I really, really, really enjoyed that talk. That was definitely my favorite one from day one.
I also really liked Kelly Sinnott's talk. She did the memory management talk. And the main reason I like that one is that it's just not a topic that we talk about that much in JavaScript development.
Mm-hmm. It's magic.
And yet it's so important, right?
It's magic. Thanks, garbage collector.
The garbage collector will get it.
It is something that we've come across in, consulting, where there's been kind of some mysterious problems that have all led back to there being memory leaks in our applications. And just some of the best practices that she went over are things that I have up till now not been implementing. So I like that she just kind of boiled it down to a list of like easy checklist items where you can be like, make sure that all of this is taken care of and you'll improve your memory management overall.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked her talk.
Yeah. It's wonderful when someone can make these really, super important concepts accessible. Because you don't come across that very often. And yet when you do, it's really nice to have that in your, have that, that lightsaber, so to speak, in your knapsack.
Yeah. I also got to, talk to Kelly a lot because she was one of the ones that had participated in the Women Helping Women, and she's just a really nice person.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently does a lot of mentoring in the community. She works for Big Nerd Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And so she ends up doing a lot of training with other developers as well. So I think that also colored my experience this year, was that I got to meet a lot of these speakers before they actually gave their presentations. And so I, sat in the audience and I'm like automatically rooting for them.
Right.
I'm like, you are an awesome human being and I really want to listen to what you have to say.
Right. Right. And did you say, what kind of car is on her, I remember looking at
Rob likes her car enthusiasm.
What's that?
So she is a motorsports enthusiast, and I saw her tweet something. I had no clue about anything. I didn't know who it was. I just saw a Hemi Cuda and # EmberConf, and I was like, instant follow. Somebody else that also programs and likes cars. Done.
Let's be besties.
Exactly.
Did we all go to the community happy hour on day one?
Yeah,
I did. I did. Oh. I had a lot of good conversations. A lot of them, two of the ones that like spring to mind were kind of this, this mobile/native divide. And I have to say, you know, I talked to a lot of people who, you know, who weren't completely convinced. They're like, wow, you know, but just there's this things I can do on native that I just can't do with the web. Like, the, you know,
yet.
What was interesting was, yeah, exactly, for example, I think one of them was the keyboard, you know, and there was a lot of kind of lamenting about, you know, you just the, in terms of handling those low level, you know, keyboard events and gesture events, it's the web's just not there and I can't.
And the buttery smooth animation.
Yeah, is. Buttery smooth. I think that was the actual term that was bandied about was buttery smooth, golden yep. butter.
That's
really what it's all. This is all about.
I'll raise my hand to be one that is skeptical. But I do think the mobile web will get there. We just have a lot of work.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I don't think it's unwise to hedge your bets. You know, I know that Ember is going all in, but I think that there is going to be a period where, you know, there is going to be a transition period. I think especially if you're a big company. Of when you, and you've got large piles of money, then you can afford to hedge your bets. But I do very firmly believe that eventually the web will win out. But at that happy hour, I had two separate conversations where that was kind of one of the subjects, and there was definitely a lot of pushback. It's like, man, I don't know if I can wean myself off that native experience. It's so buttery. So
yeah,
golden.
We also forget. We forget that native is a moving target too. They're also moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, they're also moving forward, but that was also one of the points is like if we want them to focus on the web and we want to accelerate the kind of implementation of the web features that we need to make these native experiences, then we need to there was a little bit of a moral call there. It's like we need to just go ahead and bite the bullet and figure out, you know, how we can make it work with the web, because if we do that, then the native vendors are going to want to optimize for that experience. They're going to prioritize the implementation of those features, whereas they might not prioritize them otherwise.
Oh, another thing that I loved about Tuesday was I played a game at lunch where I made myself go sit down in the middle of a table with people that I didn't know.
Interject yourself.
Which always makes me feel a little like I might throw up, but it was
like, hi, I'm Lydia.
And it was fun. I happened to sit down at this table of just like incredibly engaging, really nice people. Two of them worked for a company, and of course I've forgotten the name by now. But one of them was in Dallas, and one of them was in, I think, Utah or something like that. But across the table, there were some people having like another conversation. And as I was talking to these guys, I noticed that they had kind of stopped their conversation and were listening to me. and they looked across the table and they were like, I know you from the internet. I know your voice. I normally listen to it at 2x speed. And it was a bunch of people from Fender who apparently listen to our podcast all the time.
Nice.
And I was like, I always assume that maybe like we make these podcasts for us.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
It does feel like that a little bit. So it was really cool to like go out into the community and like have the validation that somebody listens to it and that they like really like it. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to like the Fender peeps. For being fans. That's awesome. Made me feel really good to have you come up and tell me that you liked our show.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
Yeah, I was passing out the Frontside t-shirts one full day, and people were just coming up to me like, oh, do you have any more of those? I listen to the podcast all the time. And I'm like, really? Wow. And I got that all throughout the day. So it was really, really nice. But yeah, I also recommend the lunch game that you did where you just sit at a table full of people that you don't know, or just sit at a table that has no one and then see who will come and sit next to you. And you just build like a little tribe of different people and just start talking about different things. So that's where I met Mike North. And he was very nice. And I think he had just followed me like the day before on Twitter. So we like connected again, reconnected via lunch. And then connected with someone else that works at Square. I think it was Digit, and I happen to use Digit. It's just amazing the random connections you make just by sitting at a table like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of things like that, it was we had a couple people come up to us and say, we use your open source stuff. And it's like, oh, that's crazy. It's like, oh, wait, that's right. People actually do use this stuff. Yeah. And it's really cool to see and meet them in real life and get to see it. And it's super validating, you know? It's like you help somebody.
Yeah. Because you kind of have this picture in your mind that people are listening to the podcast and be like, those idiots, I'm going to get them. No.
All right. So
day two?
Yeah. Did anybody go to the fitness boot camp?
I did. So no one wanted to join me. So I had to bite the bullet.
I went last year and couldn't walk for the entire week.
I actually remember that. You're like, I'm not going to stand up.
So Charles gets a free pass, but everyone else gets the stink eye. Yeah. It was, I think you like pay $15 and if you show up, they reimburse you, which they did. I'm not going to lie. I really did struggle to wake up early and show my face there. I think I told my partner in the class twice that I was really tired because he asked me questions and I wasn't really, my brain was not functioning. And then I would respond, yeah, I'm really tired. And he's like, yeah, you told me that.
But you showed up.
I showed up and it was definitely a good boot camp. It was like a, what do they call that? Like interval training for like a full hour. Everyone was set up with a partner. And I really liked it. I'm really glad that they set something up like that because, you know, between traveling and like just sitting all day, it's nice to have a little break and get the blood flowing and do something like that and make new connections there too via exercising. So that was really good.
Were there any technical conversations
I think it was a little too early for that.
Everybody goes to sleep again.
But it definitely.
So how about that immutability?
when you do that early in the morning, I just feel like it sets the tone for the rest of the day, and it's like a cup of coffee for me at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I say that. Like, I woke up the other day and like went out for a walk with my dog, and I was like, I should do this every day. And the next morning, I woke up and I was like, bed is nope. Just gonna snooze.
Not today.
So, what were y'all's favorite talks on day two?
I really liked Katie Yangler's talk about the Ember add-on community. Basically, what she's learned. Throughout like building out Ember Observer, and she also walked through how she picks the best add-on whenever she's looking for an add-on to add to her projects and stuff.
So like how is
I thought that was actually, so she kind of looks through like when was it committed, are there tests, like basically kind of what Ember Observer does. Mm-hmm. And like just looks through and like, you know, is it supported, when was the last time somebody responded to an issue.
Right.
Can you tell what it does?
Yeah. Can you tell what it does? Right. Like demos.
Yeah.
She said she really likes the demos.
You think of like people have these great ideas like Ember Observer, like they're, you know, eating their breakfast cereal and like, bing, a light goes off, Ember Observer. But really, you know, these things spring out of things that you were doing already. Right. This is probably like, you know, her process of evaluating things. It's like, well, I should just share this with the community. I think I'm onto something.
Yep. I thought it was pretty great. Especially being an add-on author, I thought like she nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to that one too. I think that it was a little bit of a self-selecting audience because, you know, not everybody builds add-ons, but that's something that we spend a lot of time doing here. And so it was like immediately applicable. I was like, oh yeah, okay. I need to really pay attention to what I put in my package.json for this and some other things. But that's actually literally my one criticism of the conference this year was that on day two, I felt like the speaker lineup was a little bit imbalanced in such a way that like people that were in track two on day two, the audience was a little anemic. Mm-hmm. And comparatively to the other track one. And I don't know if that's just because there were some, you know, big names that had talks last year. So for instance, like Katie's talk was matched up with Lauren Tan's talk. And Lauren Tan is an amazing speaker and she blew everybody away last year and she blew everyone away this year too. Her talk was amazing.
Yeah, that was my favorite one of day two. But it was right, you was at the same time. So you guys were in one room and I was in the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And similarly, like, you know, the Yehuda Godfrey talk was matched up against Matthew Beal's talk. And like there were just a couple of them where I was like, maybe these should have been targeted towards being like some of the keynote style talks. Like if there were, you know, clear sort of fan favorites or something like that, or things mm-hmm. where like people are really going to generate buzz in advance, like figuring out how to make it so that the other speaker that is matched up in that time slot who spent, you know, the same amount of time, the same amount of effort, the same amount of passion building out their talk doesn't end up, you know, kind of with the short end of the stick there. So I like intentionally went to the track two talks on Wednesday and had a really great experience like watching all of those talks. But I didn't love that I had to choose to not go to the track one talks. I honestly loved the format last year where it was all one track. And I actually read a follow-up that Leia wrote that was like, that's kind of like one of the main pieces of feedback that they got was that there was something lost in you having to choose which track you wanted to go to. Right. There was a little bit of like FOMO associated with the conference this year. I don't know how they could have done it differently. There were so many people there this year, but there was something special last year about it being one track. Everyone saw the same things.
Yep.
So everyone all had the conversations same were focused on the same things.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If everybody hasn't read her postmortem, seriously do. We'll link it in the show notes. It's really, really good.
Yeah. It's very detailed, and I was like so enraptured by it that I read the whole thing anyway.
Yeah. It's like a 25-minute read.
Yeah, but it's totally worth it. Like you can tell how much thought they put into this every single year. And, you know, you can feel it as a conference goer, but seeing her actually lay out all of the details of all the different things they were thinking about and all the different things they want to modify for next year and all the things that they care about just, like, makes me more excited to attend next year and see how they, like, take the awesomeness that was this year and make it even better next year.
Yeah, it was actually really cool. Like, she even went into, like, how they built the swag bags and like, I didn't know that much thought went into it. I was just like, I thought they just kind of threw things in. It's like, okay, this will be great. It's free. Everybody likes free stuff. But no, there was actually some serious thought in there.
Yeah, definitely shout out to the organizers and everyone that pitched in for EmberConf. They definitely busted their butts. And I think they like doubled the number of attendees or something like that, right? Isn't it like double from last year?
About 650 to close to 1,000.
That's amazing. And I think that says a lot about the community itself. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it boils down to a lot too for me. I mean, there is the technology, which is fantastic and I enjoy it and it makes me productive, but ultimately, I think one of the reasons I gravitate towards Ember is because of the community, because of the community events, and because of the inclusive nature of it. Because, you know, ultimately, the technology springs out of the community and not the other way around. And I think that's a common misperception in our tech culture, is that it's the virtue lies in the technology, and that the people gravitate towards the virtue in the technology, but it's actually the other way around, and that the virtue lies within the community and the technology springs forth from the virtue contained inside the community. And I think that the Ember community and EmberConf, the EmberConf is exemplary of that.
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't want to like toot our own horn too much on the podcast, but like, Charles, you put together a rockin' talk on day two that had like some amazing feedback from the community, got a lot of people talking. And I know, like, we know how much effort and time you put into building that. But like, what was that experience like being a conference speaker at a conference of nearly 1,000 people?
Quite honestly, it was terrifying. And it was interesting. It was a lot of stress, but there was a lot of, it was a freeing experience with the amount of stress, because I knew that I wouldn't, like, I couldn't, I literally, it was like, I cannot fuck this
Can't
up.
Run. Yeah.
I knew the minute that my conference talk was accepted, like, I knew that I have to at least put on, you know, a decent showing. But yeah, it was, in many ways, it was unfortunate, because I feel like it kind of detracted from my personal conference experience. And at the time to the lead up, I felt like I wanted to spend time, you know, polishing and honing. And I know, like, the night before, I had all you guys, like, come and, like, I did a run through of the talk, and you guys gave me some fantastic feedback that, like, was absolutely critical into the talk, like, next day.
Yeah, so it was at 11 o'clock.
What's that?
It was like 11 o'clock at night, and we were pretty brutally honest.
Yeah, no, you guys were.
Looking back.
No, and that was important. Like, there was, you know, any artifice, like, was off. You know, it was like,
yeah,
there was, this is a down to business, because this is going to happen tomorrow. So yeah, you guys gave me, like, fantastic feedback, and, like, even, and that was a process that was happening 7 weeks until the actual day. So you guys actually got to see it kind of evolve. And in that process too, it was encouraging to me, because, you know, I was able to see, and this is the first time I've ever done a conference talk like this, where I basically started delivering it 7 weeks beforehand, just in chunks, and seeing that, like, if you can just improve it 5% every time, you can take a pretty bad talk and make it pretty good. And, like, because it was pretty terrible, I think, the first time that I ran through it. And it really is. It's like software, where if you're upfront about, this is going to be an agile process and I'm going to iterate on it, you know, you can really make those improvements. And I know that, like, a lot of the improvements that we made, like, literally that night, made it into the talk, and were, I would say, key to making it a good one. So it's definitely was a lot of pressure, I think, especially, like, when you think, like, oh my goodness, there's 1,000 people here. But one of the things was, I had run through that talk many, many times. And so I kind of, my brain almost checked out. Once I started doing it, it was very robotic. And so I was present at a superficial level, but mainly I was giving the talk through muscle memory,
just
with a little bit of improvisation. I don't know. Some people can do it, like, you know, just off the cuff. Definitely the only way that I can give a talk is to rehearse it a lot, is something that I've come to realize. Cause I've given actually some pretty bad talks, where I tried to, like, tried to wing it. Not a good
wing
strategy.
It.
Not for me. Not for my personality type. But I'm glad. I'm really glad that it seems to have gotten good feedback and been well received from the community. As you guys know, you know, it wasn't just the preparation of the talk. That was actually based on real stuff that we were doing for a really long time. And you know, you guys lived through the experimentation phase of that, right? You got to kind of experience that. You know, everything, all, like, the raw material of what that talk was based on was, like, the year basically leading up to that. So,
yep.
So
it was inspiring to me.
I'm glad. I mean, it was I felt very honored that I was able to take these very hard won experiences and share them with the community in a very honest fashion, and kind of tell them the story of what happened to us and say that, but we ended up coming, you know, we kind of went through the ringer on a bunch of this stuff, and we tried some new stuff, and we tried some stuff that didn't work, but we tried some stuff that did work, and here it is. And so I hope that it's a conversation starter, and that, you know, it can seed a bunch of new paths, for the way that people can organize their applications.
Yeah, I think for me, what was the most powerful about your presentation was the emphasis on the storytelling component. I think, like, you know, we got to see an iteration of this talk every Friday for, like, 7 weeks. And honestly, for the first 7 weeks, the iterations were the storyline, like, the intro storyline, which just goes to show, like, how much you cared about, like, building the backstory of why this was something someone should care about. You know, why this was actually, like, a struggle for you, And then you went into the details of actually, like, how can this be applied? And I think, like, now the trick is going to be all the people that are saying, we want more. Like, give me the actual implementation details. I want to do this thing. So you're giving a couple of, like, follow-on talks now, right? Like,
yep. People have asked you to come. So I'm going to be talking at the Global Ember Meetup Conference on the 21st of May in San Francisco. I'm going to be kind of fleshing out some of the techniques that we've developed here. And then I think there's, well, I'm actually, you guys wrangled me into giving some talking points at the Ember ATX meetup, which is in a week. Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's only 2 weeks, right?
What's that? You're is welcome. It 2 weeks? Oh, it's plenty of time then.
Yeah. Okay, is it 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I don't even know where my own meetup is.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Dev life.
But yeah, no, you're right. This is actually the first talk that I gave, and that came from Brandon, actually. He deserves a huge shake, because he's like, you know, he has kind of drilled in both to me and I think all, you know, everyone who works here and everyone, honestly, that he comes into contact with, is that when you're giving a talk, when you're wanting someone to care about something, you have to tell them a story. The story has to have a protagonist. Yep. And, you know, there has to be some struggle, and there has to be some, you know, some outcome where, you know, you come out on top. And without that human element, like, people lose, you know, people lose interest, and they don't understand why they should care about it. And I think that that's actually a huge insight, that it's like such an obvious insight. And this goes into what I was talking about with the community at large, is that these are human endeavors, and we never need to lose sight of that. And, you know, the way that you talk to people is by telling them human stories, even if it's about technology. You know, the best science fiction is one that focuses on a human story. And the same applies for a conference talk. And unfortunately, it took me like 10 years and, you know, working with Brandon to like get that through my thick skull, that the technology talk is not about the technology. It is, but, you know, it's also about like a journey.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So did anybody go to the mini talks, the lightning talks?
I did.
I went to some of them. I caught the second half.
All right. I'm just saying, you know, there was an accessibility one in there.
Yeah, I think I sat in that one. I sat in a couple, but towards the end, I was getting a little drained. But yeah, I think I did sit in that one.
They were actually pretty good running through it. I actually really enjoy lightning talks.
Yeah, some of them piqued my interest, and then they ended abruptly. So they were pretty quick. I kind of wish they would have added like an extra 5-10 minutes.
Maybe they should just rename them to Millennial Talks. You know,
there you go.
Short attention span talk.
Exactly. That's why I love Vine.
Goldfish Talks.
Yeah, I think on both days by about 4 p.m., I was like pretty brain dead.
Yep.
And so I know I attended some of the talks, but I did lose some of the content on those because I was just super intellectually spent.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be socializing later, like you need to recharge your batteries before you do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think right around that time I was if I'm being honest, busy organizing karaoke for that evening, which was a massive success, I must say.
I know. I am so envious that I didn't get to go. I didn't get to attend the karaoke, because I did hear that it was epic, and not just from you.
Oh, excellent! I mean, I'm definitely biased, but I had a lot of fun, and I could tell that a lot of other people also had a lot of fun.
You had like room for how many people?
Oh man. I mean, I booked that room for like 10 people, and a couple hours in, I think there were probably 50 people there at one time. We had to split into two big rooms, and we're spilling out in a lobby. And like, man, there are some talented folks, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Tablada, I guess he works for Iron Yard now, but he's he came to Ember Karaoke last year. Mm-hmm. That guy is a performer, let me tell ya. He did some really excellent T-Swift.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I just love karaoke because it's sort of the great equalizer. Like, everyone's there to be silly, and it was really nice to unwind with a whole bunch of the people that you met at the conference who were, you know, having to be really technical about certain things, just completely cut loose and, like, do interpretive dance to something silly. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, I had a flight. I think I had to leave at, like, 3 in the morning to catch my flight because the flight left at 5. And so I had to I had to wake up at like 2:30 to catch a cab at 3. It was a nightmare. Otherwise I would have.
Sounds great. Oh,
you guys, you know how much I love karaoke.
Next year.
I'm
next
sad
year,
I missed it. You've had it now. You've had it now 2 years running, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is an ancient tradition. You heard it here first, or if you were here, you heard it here third. I mean, heard it twice before the prior 2 years. But you got to be there next year.
It's not your official responsibility.
I mean, it sounds like we got to like rent out an entire karaoke bar.
I'm on it. Yeah, the karaoke bar that they have there actually is a place called Voice Box, and I desperately wish they had one in Austin because it's actually sort of like an upscale bar that is also private room karaoke.
Was it blue inside?
Was it blue inside?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Because I think I was walking to dinner one night and I passed a huge karaoke bar.
No, so they actually had like murals, kind of like pop art murals painted on the walls, and then it was sort of like industrial ultra lounge chic.
Okay. Industrial ultra lounge.
It was rad. It was the same place we did it last year.
All right. Well, is there anything else that we want to cover?
We've come so far.
Any favorite moments?
So much. I just love EmberConf. I look forward to it literally all year.
Yeah.
It's my favorite conference. It's so well run.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that I meet there is so nice and so passionate about what they do. I just come away so energized and like excited to go work on something new.
Yeah, me too.
It revamped my year.
Yeah, and for being my first conference, I loved it. I'm hooked. I'm going to be there every single year. Yeah.
Y'all get any more of those Ember comps?
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Leia. Thank you, Till. Thank you, Ember community. It was truly fantastic. And we will see you next year.